Hello everyone, my name is Billy.
My name's Stu.
And welcome to We Like to Watch, the podcast where we talk about all things we've been watching over the week, from movies to TV and everything in between. This is episode 48. And we haven't... It's an interesting episode, this episode. We've been... Well, Stu and myself have been at the Sydney Film Festival. So that's what we've been watching all week. It's not going to focus on one film, it's just going to focus on what we've seen and what's coming up in the next week. We're in the middle of the 2 weeks of the Sydney Film Festival.
Yeah.
We're both a little bit weary.
It's taking its toll.
It's taking its toll on Stu, who usually watches more films than me.
I don't know
He's a dishevelled...
wreck
of his former self.
More dishevelled wreck than I usually am.
Yes. We're just going to go through our pull list of what we've seen. There's not much in the way of news. The only news, I guess, we can talk about is the fact that Adam West passed away over the weekend.
Yeah,
and... He had been battling leukemia. Or it was one of the cancers. I'm pretty sure it was leukemia.
The bat cancer ray didn't fix it.
No, the can of bat cancer ray didn't. But I believe, like... He didn't die due to it. He died sort of after it. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. It's like, I feel like that's the worst thing about cancer. It's like, you can beat it. But then, like, as you get older...
Then you get a cold. And you die of the cold.
Yeah, as you get older, you're, like, tired and everything. You got to rest up.
Glenn...
That's the other one.
And just now, I realise when I go to say her name, it's the first time I've probably ever sound like out loud as Glenn... Headley.
Yeah, Headley.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that have misspelled her name as well.
Glenn.
Headley, but it's like, it's with L-Y. It's like not with an L-E-Y or something.
Yeah.
But she's from...
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Sergeant she's been Bilko. A lot of, like, the... in comedies, most comedies of the 90s, late 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was in a lot of films with Steve Martin.
Yeah. And still very young. She was only 63.
Yeah, and I think she passed away from... I don't even think they mentioned what she passed away from. But yeah, so two deaths, so that's sad. I don't know.
2017, just chipping along nicely.
Felt really sad over the weekend with, Adam West. It was like, I grew up watching him as Batman.
Yeah, exactly.
He was my first Batman.
And still, I rewatched his Batman movie this year at the Orpheum.
Ah.
Not that long ago, enjoying the ridiculousness.
I couldn't find any of my 60s Batman stuff, so I ended up watching, there's an episode of the Batman animated series called Beware the Grey Ghost.
Ah, yes.
And it's Batman who's played, like the animated series Batman who's played, who does the voice, I'm trying to remember his name now,
It was the guy that was on the Drew Carey show, wasn't it?
Yeah, he does all the animated voices for Batman. My name is...
Not Kevin Conroy,
Kevin Conroy. So... So he's Batman, and there's this old crime that's happening, like there's the Mad Bomber, and it's using paraphernalia and stuff from this TV show called The Grey Ghost, which is a show Bruce Wayne grew up watching, and the person who played the Grey Ghost, essentially Batman, of that, like, that it was played by Adam West.
And
it's kind of cool to watch that.
We never got round to catching the Caped Crusader. Didn't remember they did the cartoon this year?
Yeah,
was
I never
this
got
year
a chance.
Or last year?
No, I think early...
Maybe last year.
It might have been late last year, early this year. My
because
brain
that, like Adam West, and it was the same Robin, wasn't it? Is it Burt Ward?
What's
it?
Yeah. Burt Ward?
Back as Robin.
But yeah, if you look across online, a lot of people sad and actors professing their... regret and everyone passing over the weekend.
I saw one of the funniest retweets by Jonah Robinson, the film critic, where someone said, like, RIP Adam West, and you'll be fighting criminals in heaven. When he was climbing a rope, like, up the side of the building, like he does through some clouds. And she just retweeted with, like, is there a lot of crime in heaven?
I know. But, and also, and if he's climbing it, wouldn't you have put it sideways? Because that's how they used to film.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, walking along. the silliness.
Yes. But yes, so we're just going to go... Look, we're not going to just go into an in-depth discussion of the films we've seen, because Stu's seen a lot more than me, and I've only seen 7.
I've only, due to my bad hangover the other day and drunken shenanigans, which you may or may not have been part of and responsible for.
I wasn't responsible for it, but I was part of it. I knew when to tap out.
I'm down a few, but how many have you seen so far?
7.
I'm 16 in.
I've had to cancel a few just to stuff life that's come up. Yeah, life got in the way.
Which always happens.
Yes. So
how many have you got left?
I have got left, let me see. I think I've got 1 tonight, 2 on Thursday, 2 on Friday, and 2 on Saturday. And that also doesn't include the screeners that we've been given to watch.
We've been allowed
access to watch.
I think I've got about 13 or 14 left. So it's going to be a good end. It's going to be a good end to the week.
I guess we'll start off with the... Oh, no. So was Waiting for Giraffes the first film you saw?
No. The first one I caught was Anna Mon Amour the night before.
And what did you think of that?
It's really good. little bit confronting.
What's it about?
It's a person who's got a... Sort of a very tumultuous... a bit close to home, actually. Someone had a very tumultuous relationship. He's Romanian film. And it's a young guy who's dating a girl who has some severe mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it just follows sort of a decade in their lives, like problems they encounter, challenges, mm-hmm. where the relationship ends up. It's a very... fairly gritty and raw way to for me to open the festival.
Who's directed it?
Good question. Give me 2 seconds. I'll look it up because it was someone who's quite renowned. I don't know, even though the name's not coming to coming to mind. Where is it?
Was that the only film you saw that night?
No, I saw 2 because it was directed by Kalyan Peter Netzer, who is fairly well known Romanian director. I think he's Romanian. I think so. He is Romanian. And then I also saw The Ornithologist that night.
Yes, I missed that.
Yeah, which was, again, it was a hell of a way to kick off as a 1-2 combo. It was
in your face.
You're in a film festival because you're going to be watching some wackadoo stuff.
You're going to watch some wackadoo world movies.
Yeah,
it does feel like,
Anna Mon Amour was pretty much, it was a fairly straightforward storyline.
It is almost like watching SBS.
Yeah, which is
great. I do like.
Which is the whole point. The whole point's to see things that we're not going to see. Even though Sydney gets a lot of independent and international cinema, but there's stuff that Anna Mon Amour or The Ornithologist will, in all likelihood, won't get a cinematic release.
No, they won't. If they do, it's probably at one of the other festivals that'll happen in the year or something. There is something that the director of the film festival has said, and it's if you see every single one of the films at the festival and you like all of them, then we've done something wrong. It's more about I guess going there and enjoying yourself, but also challenging your viewpoints on stuff.
Well,
I guess, and your experience.
The strange thing is, and I often think about this. If these were free, if all these movies, say, were free, say these were all on Netflix.
It would take a long time for people to watch them as well.
A lot of these, if you actually looked at the description, you look at it in the catalogue for a film festival, and you're like, I'll check that out. If you were at home watching on Netflix, I bet you wouldn't turn it on.
We've
picked these because there's a selection and a timetable, and things have to fit in that, and therefore we take a chance on things. It's the same as, doing a wine tasting. This is how I like to do it. You go to Hunter Valley, and you go and taste wines, and they're like, we've got a special in today. That bottle you liked, that's only $30. And you sit there going, you're wrapped up in the love of it, and you go, $30? I'll take 2. And then you get home and you crack it like a couple of weeks later and you're like, this wine is hopeless. Why
this tastes like shit.
Why did I drop $30 on this? And then you go to like the Bottle-O and you've never spent $30 on a bottle of wine.
No, you
like, you know. So I think there's things when you're just in the mood, you get wrapped up into it. Like I prefer to watch things that challenge me in general.
Yeah.
But especially at the film festival. Like I like things that are sort of here to do something a little bit different, a little bit out of the box, because we get we get generic films the rest of the year for the most part. Exactly. But the ornithologist was all right. It was like a guy, he's a bird watcher that goes out camping by himself and just sort of crazy stuff happens
from there.
Yeah, and
I mean, he loses, doesn't he lose his wallet, his identity?
Lose his wallet, he gets kidnapped.
He gets given up as a sacrifice.
He may be dead. The whole thing may be a metaphor. He's not actually the character that we've been seeing. Like,
it's a trip.
It is. It's, you know, like it was fun, but also, like, on the my first day, we had obviously the day job during the day, and then when did the two films, I was tired by the end. I'm glad I hung it out, though. But then we saw it. I was there for your first.
Yes, yeah, so my first film was on the second day of the festival. Waiting for Giraffes.
Yeah.
Now that's a sort of a documentary by Marco de Stefanos, and it's about the only zoo in occupied Palestine.
Yep.
It's about the story of how this zoo is trying to apply for. Is it Wenzo or Weno?
Ezcar or something.
Ezcar or something. It's basically the UN for zoos.
Yeah, yeah.
And to meet the application, like the application requirements, they have to bring the zoo up to code.
Yeah.
So it's all about that, and it's all about the people that work there, the director, the doctor.
Yeah, so the zoo's head vet is
So the story's main focus is on him, and it talks about how they had a giraffe, but during
one of the conflicts with Israel.
Like the giraffe didn't get shot at, but it was shot near it, and it had a panic attack, and because a giraffe's brain is so far away from its heart,
it lowered its head and then lost the pressure from its heart
to the brain, and then that made the brain explode.
Yeah,
so it's all about, like, you know, they feel like they want to because everyone is occupying Palestine, they can't leave or whatnot, they want to bring animals that, like, no one will see. I mean, they want to make an aquarium. I mean, and that's the whole thing. They're waiting on new giraffes.
Mm.
So, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I like the idea of it sort of being... It's sort of like when you graph something like when you look at a football... When you look at a sports movie.
Mm.
When, no matter what, in what country you're in around the world, we all still, as humans, it's the one thing we can all enjoy, is, like, looking at animals in captivity. So it's something that... No matter what your political or religious beliefs are, it's something that unites us. And that's what UN for Zoos was a bit like that, going, look, we can sort of be, we have to live within a political framework, but we're all here to help each other. It's a very humanitarian kind of thing.
Mm.
I liked it. I
really enjoyed it as well.
There's some good characters. I don't think it didn't look like the world's most entertaining zoo, but.
No. And then after that, we watched the Nile Hilton incident.
Yeah, that was amazing.
It's an Egyptian film. Is it Egyptian?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, it's directed by Tariq Saleh. It's about in Cairo, a few weeks before the 2011 revolution.
Mm.
And it focuses on police detective Noureddin, who works in the infamous Qazir El Nile police station. And he's handed a case of a murdered singer. And he soon realised, like, you know, the investigation concerns the powerful elite and some of the president's inner circle. It's very much a noir film.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's on the take, even Noureddin. Like, everyone's very much scratch my back, scratch yours.
Yeah.
Everyone's very much of, like, don't let other police departments know about this case, otherwise or this racket that's going on, otherwise
they'll want in.
They'll want in, sort of thing.
And it's that sort of Chinatown thing of like the mighty are actually untouchable.
Yeah.
Like no matter when you think you've got them, they can always wriggle out.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
I really enjoyed this film.
That was like one of my highlights of the.
Yeah, same.
Like that'd be my top five.
Yeah, it's probably in my top five of the festival. Then you didn't watch anything the rest of the night, but then I went and watched Slightly Hammered. Manifesto.
Yeah.
Which
you experienced.
I experienced Manifesto. You didn't? So it's directed by Julian Rosenfeld. And it's the movie version of an installation piece that was in an art gallery.
Yeah, here. We had it last year.
Yeah. I think last year.
Yeah.
That's where I saw it. It's all about Cate Blanchett. Cate Blanchett plays these 13 different personas. Like among them, a school teacher, a puppeteer, a newsreader, a factory worker, a homeless man. Weather reporter. And it's very much, they're reading a different type of manifesto, like from various types of people, futurists, supremists, situationists, dadaists,
nihilists,
yeah. Architects, dancers, filmmakers, everything. Yeah. It was an experience. It was good, but I think it works better as an installation piece. Whereas, like, in the art gallery, one persona was shown there, sort of, and then you'd walk around to the other side of the gallery, and then the other one would be playing as well. Yeah, They're not all in the one sequence.
No.
So we had to kind of take a break.
We had, like, four per room when it was down here at the...
Yeah, well, yeah. That's the thing. You could probably focus on one or four of them.
And then you just got up, walked around, stretched a bit. You didn't, like... And you could walk, like... I think the best thing was you could go... pull out halfway through and go to the next one, whereas you're stuck. But they look gorgeous.
Yeah, they do.
Shot all around the world. Look,
Cate Blanchett is amazing. Oh, yeah. Look, she's amazing. Yeah. I love Cate Blanchett. So, yeah, look, if you get a chance, go watch it. If you get a chance, if it's on in an art gallery near you, go watch the gallery piece. But, yeah, that was my rest of that night.
Then I moved to, due to my hangover, I missed a couple of films I really wanted to see, and I ended up pulling myself together and catching the Whitney Houston doco, Whitney, yes. Can I Be Me?
And how was that?
It was pretty much felt same as like Amy from like. Mm-hmm.
Is it by the same person who did Amy?
No, don't think so. But just I don't know, really talented person who had a few demons. Rose to fame.
Had yes people around her.
Had yes people. Had some conflict in her camp.
And then I guess couldn't really be who she wanted to be.
Got into drugs.
There we go.
And then ended life early. Going well.
Yeah. How did she die again?
OD.
Yeah.
But it was like, well, again, complications after an OD. So, good. Get to see her sing lots of songs, and I love Whitney's music. She had a hell of a career over the time that it was, but problem was it's a bit like Amy Winehouse. It's all been played out for us in like the tabloids.
Mm.
So there wasn't a lot. It wasn't a great deal. They touched on her bisexual past,
which isn't really talked about much.
No, because it's like
it's only started to come out in the especially past like years.
Lesbians in the black community are like it's just not.
Well, even like, gays.
Well, gays have still got some interest, but like for. Yeah. Like, black women did not come out, really, and, like, acknowledge...
Yeah, it was very strange. I'm surprised that she never did. I think it was more... I think she would lose her status
but
as
also
that type of singer.
The time that it was, like, it was...
But the thing is, like, in recent years, when it's talked about, it's not talked about in a shameful manner either,
no,
which is great.
It's like a revisionist sort of...
Yeah. Well, even her ex-husband has said, look, yeah, they were lovers or whatever, but it's...
Have you
like
watched,
he doesn't care or anything.
Have you watched Master of None?
No.
Okay.
There's I need to.
Lesbian character in that that's like quite powerful because she's a black woman.
Okay.
You should watch Master of None.
Yeah, I know. It is on my list.
And it's short. They're short episodes.
Yeah, it is on my list. While you were doing that, I was watching 7852. which is my movie that I've been hanging for, and I think I've talked about it on the podcast before. And it's a documentary by Alexandra O'Filippe, and it's about it's about the shower scene in Psycho.
Yeah.
Which is made with 78 shots and 52 cuts. So that's why it's called 78-52.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. So that's why it's called 78-52. And it goes, it's a feature length one, so it's about 90 minutes.
Yep.
And it has like a whole bunch of like various directors, actors,
sound
actresses,
engineers,
sound people, people who work behind the scenes in films,
critics,
film appreciators, and they were just talking. It was literally like sitting, like, I know we were watching it, but it was like sitting with other film geeks.
Yeah, it was like
in a conversation about
sort of like
our favorite film.
A really, really high end DVD commentary.
Yeah, but like
because they went through it like almost millisecond by millisecond through the
but is it
there's only what 2 minutes? It's 2 minutes of film. They were the shower sequence.
Yeah, I think it was 2 minutes. Yeah.
About that.
Yeah. But and the other thing is, it's like it's not. It does, like, you know how some DVD commentary can come off a bit wanky.
Yeah.
This doesn't.
No. But they start. I mean, the only thing.
I mean, there are some people that are interviewed that are a bit like, okay, why did they put you in the interview? But
no, but I mean, like,
I really enjoyed it.
It was a look at, you know, the only time it sort of felt a bit stretched was where they were like, they were doing a review of what Psycho meant to the American culture at that time, and some of those got a bit like there were people drawing sort of long bows saying,
yeah,
there was a couple of things like going, look, if you, it, I don't know if you saw the Kubrick doco a couple of years ago called Room 237.
No,
there's sort of people that like just some take the like the fan theories a little too far, but you but yeah, it was.
But look, I do find that stuff interesting though. When they were talking about how it was the first film to do this sort of thing and show.
Yeah, it was, and it's you forget how violent.
Yeah.
You forget how violent it is because
yeah.
it goes by so quick.
Mm.
When you actually break it down, like second by second,
mm.
it's insane. And the film technique on show. Like,
yeah, look, I highly look. I mean, I don't know if it'll get a. I don't think it'll get a release.
No, like, well, like, the People vs. George Lucas didn't get a huge...
Yeah, I don't think it'll get a wider release. It'll probably be...
It might
be
end up
on
Netflix or something.
Netflix or Stan or something. Or, you know, DVD, Blu-ray. I'd highly recommend to get a chance to watch it if you can. But, yeah, that was my... I guess... Was that Wednesday?
Yeah, then I went and caught...
No, Thursday.
I caught Taste of Cherry.
Yes.
The Abbas Kiarostami film. Great, great little film of this bloke... In getting around sort of the countryside in Iran, basically just wanting to kill himself and going around like picking up random strangers in his car, offering them a job, and the job is he's going to go lie in an open grave and take a whole bunch of painkillers or sleeping pills to kill himself. He just wants someone to wait 2 days, call his name, if there's no response, just to bury him. Or put 20 shovels of dirt over him and walk away. And just funny how people that won't do it, and then like just sort of people that say it's a sin. And it's him sort of coming to terms with, like him almost justifying why he is going to kill himself and just really, like, you know, it's really lo-fi tech that he's made it with, rattling around in this car in Iran, but it's just stunning. Like, it's just a beautiful film.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be the director's last film as well.
Like, oh, is he
passed
away?
He passed away, like, last year.
Okay.
Then I caught My Year with Helen straight after that, which was following Helen Clark around for a year as on her bid to become the Secretary General of the UN. Mm. Which there was, because I don't pay much attention to
politics
or world events. And I was sitting there, and as I was introducing it, like the director came on and said, "Oh, and we have Helen Clark here in the front row." And I said, "Oh,
That's kind of cool.
I was like, no, that's cool. But I was like, wait, I don't remember her being announced as Secretary General. And they didn't, at the beginning of the film, say, and we have Secretary... And I was like, oh. So I'm halfway through the film, and I'm thinking, wait a minute. She didn't win this. And I was like, oh, damn it. Then the rest of it was like... Like, I don't... I didn't...
Like, it was a weird spoiler for her to
Well, it was a weird spoiler for her to be there. If she wasn't there, I would have gone... The whole thing, I would have been guessing. Oh, did I?
Should have just said, what's her name? Her name, not her actual title.
No, but they didn't say her title. Oh, okay. Like, in the thing. Like, in... So I was sitting there going, oh, wait. And then I was like... But it was well done. It was a bit, okay. Just looked at sort of... There's never been a male Secretary General of the UN yet. And it's been going for 80 years, and there's never been a female. And they're like, well, it's... Largely just a symbolic, like, the UN has no real power.
No.
Secretary General has no power of veto.
They influence, but
influence.
So it's
like, why can't that go, like, why can't it be a woman?
And don't they, like, but don't they put restrictions and stuff and everything?
No, well, no, because this is Security Council does things.
Okay.
But there's, the General, Secretary General doesn't answer to anyone.
Oh, okay.
Then we both caught the next two films together.
Yes, so the next film we both saw... was Happy End by Michael Haneke.
Yes.
Now, this is my first Michael Haneke film.
Yeah.
I've been told I need to go and watch everything that he does. This wasn't your first Michael Haneke film.
No.
Now, the best way to describe it is basically, it's a snapshot from the life of, it's called a bourgeois, so I guess a very rich European family.
Bourgeois.
And but it's a snapshot. It's a snapshot over, I guess, a year.
Yeah, roundabout.
6 months, yeah.
A year, six months, roughly. Starting with a death and ending with
a death.
Their death and bad stuff in between.
Yeah, it's just like from one catastrophe to another in this like this rich European family and how they deal with it. But it's also like how, I guess, how each... I'm trying to figure out the best way to describe it. So, like, there's the grandfather, and there's the
It's like every level of the patriarchy.
Yeah, every level of the patriarchy, how they deal with things. Because, I mean, everyone deals with life in a certain way, like, as you grow up. Like, I mean, I look at things differently to my parents type thing.
And the funny thing is we all think we're the one watching... the other levels, and no one's watching us.
Yeah.
But they're watching us just as much as we're watching them.
Exactly.
We've got our foibles, they've got their foibles.
Yeah. It was a very dark comedy. I loved it.
The thing I loved about it, there are a lot of times when the actual dialogue was taken out of our ear range as the viewer. So it was putting us in this position like we were a bit of a voyeur on this family, and they were taking things out of our earshot. So... we weren't always to know what was going on. We had to rely on other mechanics in the plot and the storytelling to clue us into what happened.
Yeah, because there was forward jumps without saying, like, oh...
what time or where are we?
2 days later or something.
And the funny thing was there'd be heaps of conversations that we wouldn't be privy to. And then times...
we just have to fill in the blanks.
Well, then times when there'd be all this needless chatter that we were given that didn't make any sense. Like, there was the scene at the party... when the granddaughter was filling up her plate, we had all these people talking over the top of her, and we had no context for what any of that meant. It was so weird. The information we did get,
it's like
not
very,
the stuff we actually wanted
like
or needed.
Yeah, it's like he was doing different film styles.
Oh, and the patience when he would just lock the camera off on certain things. I was talking to a couple of people afterwards about it, just like going, there are just some stunning, like the... you can tell when it's an older, seasoned filmmaker when they're just patient and they're like, I know what I'm doing. I'm not like, we're not in a hurry. We're going to get there when we get there. And just trust me, it all works out.
Yes.
Just, it's going to be okay.
No, yeah, look, I don't know. There was one thing I noticed in this, but it's also within all like the foreign films I've seen at the Sydney Film Festival. All the narrated ones and that are given subtitles. I don't know. I feel like sometimes... I don't know if that's just me, but sometimes I feel like the colour of the actual subtitles is very... like, if you choose a wrong colour, it might spoil the film.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's just the filmmaker.
Yeah, but, yeah, I guess. I don't know, like, with this one, it didn't spoil it, but I kind of, like, would have liked the subtitles to be yellow.
Yeah.
So I find the yellow subtitling, like, actually stands out.
Yeah.
It's easy to read. It was just because it was, because it's a French film, the Michael Haneke one.
Yeah.
It's all very fast, so the subtitles are kind of fast.
I think the problem is as well, depending what the seats are like at the State Theatre.
That's it as well.
You can be quite flat.
Yeah.
So you could see people like having to lean round people yeah. to see the like to
I
see
was
the
doing
subtitles.
That a lot. Yeah.
And it can be frustrating to the people behind you that you're bobbing and weaving.
Mm.
But that's one of the true that up until the film we just saw together, that was one of my films or is still one of my films of the festival.
Yeah. Then we both saw after Happy End, Ingrid Goes West from director Matt Spicer,
which we were really looking. This was like
yeah,
one of
I
our
would look from the trailer. I was looking forward to, and it tells the story of Ingrid Thornborough or something. I can't remember.
Yeah,
can't remember last name. Yeah, who is sort of like obsessed with social media and people,
slightly
social media stars, to the point where. Like, she's had something bad happen, and then she sees someone who's based in California, and she basically uproots her entire life and moves there and tries to emulate this particular social media person and become her friend and integrate her in her life. And it goes a bit crazy from there. It's very... Not single white female, but not horror-like like that, but very much of... an obsessed friend type thing.
Yeah, but this, it ties so well into like, and you know, there's been a lot said about the evils of social media.
Yeah.
The dopamine, the dopamine hit.
It
all,
is.
When
oh,
we all
get
when we all get the ding, we all go, ooh, somebody loves me, somebody likes me, heart. Like, that.
Some of the scenes in this are great. Like, there's literally like a 5 minutes where she's like, tap, tap. Flick, tap, tap, flick, tap, tap, flick on Instagram, like liking everything.
And the beautiful thing of like though, and I mean, okay, maybe they're cliche already, but like when she's sitting at home and she's looking at like, you know, I follow a lot of like the world's best chefs on Instagram because for inspiration.
Mm.
But there she's watching, there she sees this beautiful like poached egg on toast.
Mm.
Then she looks over at what she's had for dinner, which is like
Doritos and a
hot dog or something.
Yeah.
And then it's like double, and then it's like the heart. But yeah, it also gets at that sort of like, what is, like, if you pour yourself into social media, that can, what lives in the screen is your new reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's all that matters is
exactly.
what. Exactly. And
it was essentially, like, the film was essentially a selfie to all of us.
Yes. But I don't think it quite.
And you, podcasters, you'll never hear me be that literal or intellectual about a film again.
We hope. I'm not sure it quite nailed it. Like, I felt like it...
Yeah, look, I mean, for me, I think I enjoyed it a little bit more than you.
Yeah.
But
the brother,
I could see
Nicky,
where you're coming.
Took me completely out. Like, when he came on the scene, the movie for me just, like, took this big left turn. I was like...
But see, I saw him as the sort of... The foil of the film.
Yeah, but the problem was he... For how crazy...
You needed him.
But for how crazy it was still fairly toned down.
Mm.
He came in and he
Actually, yeah, I'd look... From the
was from another film. He
yeah,
was
I
like,
know, from the trailer. I mean, I knew he was going to be in it from the trailer, but I thought...
Not that broad.
Yeah, no, I didn't... I actually, from the trailer, thought it was going to be darker than it was.
Yeah. And it was dark to an extent.
Yeah.
It had moments, but not... and the ending, which I've sort of... I mean, not that we dismiss films when we come out of them.
No.
Not all of them sort of play back through.
I
but
kind of
this
like
is,
the ending.
This has lingered for a couple of days, like, since we
Oh, look, I kind of really enjoy the ending, like, but...
I think the ending worked. I think, like, it was very similar ending to something similar... Oh, similar to something that was similar in, Anne Hathaway's Colossal this year, where she goes through, and I won't spoil most of the details, but she sort of goes, it's a whole film dedicated around like her having a problem with alcohol, and she goes through this big, you know, gigantic experience all the way up to the very last shot, and someone looks at her and says, "Would you like a drink?" And we're all sitting there going, the audience is going, "No, she's sober. She's learnt from the," and she just looks at the camera and goes, "Well," and she's going straight back into it, which is, but it,
sometimes
it works.
I don't know. I find it sometimes it's good when the characters don't learn, but then sometimes I'm like,
what have we just been doing for the last 2 hours?
Exactly.
The next one I caught after that was Doug Liman's The Wall, which he directed Bourne Identity.
Mm-hmm.
This is John Cena and Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
As John Cena's a US sniper.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron...
Cena?
What did I say? Cena. Cena. So, Cena.
John Cena. Cena makes him seem... I don't know. I was going to say intellectual, then I'm a bit of a wanker for saying that.
He's super bright.
He's... he's a wrestler.
Yeah. But he's like also so funny.
I think he used to be a Marine.
So he can rip our arms off for real, and he's very bright. Speaks a couple of languages, I think.
See, a lot of wrestlers do.
I don't know. Maybe a lot of
wrestlers do films. Mm. Like WWE try to get them to do films.
Yeah, but they do.
To push the market of the WWE more. But like, you watch the films, come watch the wrestling.
But did you see Trainwreck? Him with the Amy Schumer movie?
No.
He was amazing in that.
I think he's like sort of...
He's broken out.
Yeah, he's broken out now. Yeah. Like The Rock did.
No, but like the WWE films are like... And I know he made one. Like he did The Marine, and then they were up to like The Marine 7 because of they got their newest boys into it. So he's a sniper. Aaron Taylor-Johnson's his spotter, like his eyes that works next to him. And they're sitting off this... they're in Iraq, 2007, Iraq War. War's been declared over, but they're still there as a peacekeeping force.
Mm.
They're going to it. There's like a pipeline being put in, and there's all these contractors that have been, looks like they've been killed.
Mm.
So they're going down. They're sitting off it for ages going, look, there's no one around. Let's just, and their radio's broken. They're like, or got some problems. They're like, let's go down. We'll use the contractor's radio. We'll radio to get some help and get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
When they go down, they both get hit by a sniper who was nearby.
Yeah.
John Cena hits the ground.
Mm.
Aaron Taylor-Johnson jumps over this wall.
Mm.
Effectively, he's hiding behind this wall while there's this crack shot sniper on the other side. Through a bit of trickery from the sniper, the Iraqi sniper, they end up being on the same radio comms. So it's just the two of them having a conversation for most of the movie, talking about like sort of the politics of why they're there. It was a bit like, reminded me of The Shallows.
Oh, okay.
So you're stuck somewhere.
Mm.
He's injured because he gets shot in the leg.
Mm.
Wounds very bad.
Mm.
And he's got to like navigate his way around this wall to various things while this sort of shark is stalking him outside. Interesting, tight little film. It was a nice sort of popcorn movie in the middle of like festival fair. Like,
exactly. I haven't had a sort of, I guess, popcorn film yet. I mean,
that's why I took in Wonder Woman yesterday. Yeah. It's just like as a cleanser.
What else did you watch?
Is that it for you? Oh, you just the one we just watched. Yeah, so yesterday I watched, because they're doing the Akira Kurosawa piece.
Mm-hmm.
For like every year they focus on a different director. Last year was Scorsese, this year is Kurosawa.
Mm-hmm.
So I yesterday went and caught The Hidden Fortress and Yojimbo. I'd never seen either. Hidden Fortress is like one of the major influences on George Lucas to make Star Wars, and you can see clearly where he's ripped off, like straight up ripped off characters from Hidden Fortress. Like the movie starts with like a short guy, short little Japanese guy and a tall guy walking along like this sort of fairly deserted place, squabbling about whose fault it is that they're in the predicament that they're in. So, and they go like, and then they meet up with like this really tough sort of bandit or slash sort of samurai.
Mm.
Then guess who they meet up with? A really feisty princess.
No old wizard?
No. Well, he sort of doubles as the guy they meet up with, who's played by Mifune kind of doubles as the wizened person that they're with. So it's them trying, basically, there's this princess that's gone on, there's a warring, two warring, like, territories, or clans. Mm. A princess from one goes missing, and the baddies are out looking out for her. She has to get home with this samurai, with all this gold that they've got hidden at, like, a sort of a safe house.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to smuggle it back into their territory.
Yeah.
So they're trying to get home while everyone's out looking for them.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing.
Okay.
Bit rapey, though, in some points. That got a bit... I guess it was just a weird product of its time, but there was some stuff where characters were, like, openly saying they want to rape someone and, like, here, you take a walk while I take care of business. And it was like, ugh, that's...
Okay, yeah.
Then it was Yojimbo, who was, I'm pretty sure they said Fistful of Dollars was a direct remake of that. Amazing. Called them Wonder Woman again for a rewatch.
Okay.
Much better on a rewatch. Borderline loved it. I still have some issues with that final set piece, though. The third act.
Okay. All
right. It, like, one thing that got me is, like, which I didn't think about till yesterday. If, like, Diana and Ares are having that massive battle, are we to assume that all the soldiers were witnessing that?
Yes.
So then why does the world not go forward knowing that, like, they watched these massive beings have, like...
Because people, humanity chooses to forget things.
Oh, so in war, we put war behind us, and okay, I'm down with that. I then caught 7852 last night, so
yes.
Yeah, big fan. Mm. Then this morning, I caught Amasan.
Yes.
Really interesting doco about the Japanese, following these Japanese female divers who dive for, like, sea urchins, abalone.
Okay.
And whatever they can bait, and snails, abalone, and urchins.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of follows. I don't know if you find this with docos. Like, sometimes you'll have, like, a narrative doco where you can, you know, it's about a specific topic, or it's sort of our mission statement, and we're going to look at bang, 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 bang. You got the talking heads going, when X happened, when Y happened. Then there are other docos that are just like, they just sit and observe, and there's no real structure to the story going forward. And they just observe for a couple of hours.
This is one that's observed.
Just observe. So it was, like, good, but then I was like, yeah, you're sort of waiting for something to happen, but then you just sort of marvel that you're just seeing lives that you will never see in your real life. Like, I'll never get to see this small little Japanese fishing village where these women go out, you know, every day, kit it up and dive for... And then we
just watched I Am Not Your Negro.
Which was my... This was the first film I booked this year when this was announced, it was coming to Sydney Film Festival.
Yeah, no, I had it on my must-watch list.
This was the first ticket I booked. Because I was like, I'm going to that.
Yeah. So it's directed by Raoul Peck. And it's working from the last sort of manuscript of James Baldwin.
Yeah.
James Baldwin was a writer, a black American writer.
Playwright, screenwriter.
Activist.
Academic
sort of thing.
Genius.
Yep, genius. Amazing speech.
Yeah.
Speaker.
Amazing person.
And it's sort of like the film is... sort of, I guess, helping finish off his last manuscript.
Yeah, because he wanted to write a book about his three friends that were murdered.
Yeah, which is Malcolm X.
Medgar Evers.
And
Martin Luther King.
He never got a chance to finish it. Can't remember why. I'm not sure if it was because he passed.
Must have just been, he died.
Yeah. But yeah, it's very much, it creates a mediation of what it means to be black in America, in the United States. And it was interesting because, like, I mean, obviously, obviously, James Baldwin, you know, he passed away and doesn't know what's happening now.
Mm.
But it was just interesting to, like, sort of intersect some of his speeches and writing that was being read by
Samuel L. Jackson.
Samuel L. Jackson, who was the narrator for the film.
Stunning as the...
Yeah, I mean, it's not his, like, normal voice.
No, it's a bit more gravel to
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So, it was very much like James Baldwin's speeches and his writing spoken by
Samuel L. Jackson.
Samuel L. Jackson intersect with the photos and footage from back then.
Yeah, like
photos and footage from now.
Yeah.
Like after James Baldwin passed. And it's just...
It's eerie yeah, that he sort of predicted like that where things
predicted
are going.
Predicted things have happened, yeah.
But it...
It's an amazing film.
And I like that he was trying to... We got to see James Baldwin sort of looking at the sort of approaches to race relations going, I'm not, like, if Martin Luther King is love and Malcolm X is anger, and not anger but action, and neither of them being sort of, no one's right, no one's wrong.
Mm.
I like that this was more focus in turning it back on America and saying, why do you have a word, like, why do we have racial slurs or homophobic slurs? Like, why do we call things gay? Like, why do we need to, if we need to brand something as gay or black or Asian or what's that saying about us? And I don't say what's that saying about us, so we're obviously both Caucasian.
Mm.
And we're Australian, we're not American, but I'm saying that, and I shouldn't, maybe the problem is
we're
framing this even from a...
No, and that's what James Baldwin's kind of, like, said in a few of his speeches, it's like, what does that say about you?
Yeah.
As a person.
And I say, maybe I'm saying us as humanity.
Yeah.
Like, not us as in, we're white, therefore we're on the good... Because, you know, we joked when we're going into this, saying, oh, there's a lot of white people in this, like...
Yeah, well, yeah, we did. I mentioned that. Like, there was a... Literally, there was the entire auditorium was 90% white.
But then that's... Like, so is probably every movie that... You know, they're no different to every movie at the festival. But it just is... I thought it was a really powerful thing to turn that mirror back and say, look... You know, and this was intercut with footage of, like, you know, things from the 60s of, like, people saying white power and Nazi symbols in America, which...
And race riots.
Which we're seeing today.
Yeah.
We're seeing that still today. Yeah. Like... But that thing of turning it back and saying...
No, it's not Nazism. It's alternative right. Or Gamergate.
But, like, that act of turning it back on society and saying, all right, you've got a word, and, you know, I hate to use the word, like, nigger. Mm. But, I mean, what society makes a word like nigger, what does that say about... The society, if it needs that word to use.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a powerful word. We hate using it, like all racial slurs. But I think this one specifically has this weird aggression to it, which we've seen, I think, we've seen things in our lives, and we've watched things through the media, and we've watched how black culture has taken that word back. A lot, like, you know, we've seen how it's like, you know, there's been some stuff with thing of Bill Maher recently, like him using it on, like, using that word in a joke, he said, and like a whole black community just coming out basically saying, no, you can't. Like, we've taken that word, that's not yours.
Mm.
Ice Cube said, like, that's our, like, you guys get too familiar and you think you can, like, that's our word, that's not yours anymore.
Yeah.
And I love that way of, like, him. He summed up saying...
I mean, like, I feel like that's a way in regards to sort of, like, it's funny, like, a lot of gay culture and gay language and stuff is taken by, I'm not accusing yourself of taking it, but, like, is in, like, sort of taken and embraced by other communities, and it's like...
Like, what do you mean? Like, what type of...
Like, you know, lingo and stuff, like, talking shade and whatnot. Like, just various... It's like, yeah, getting too familiar sort of thing. Like, or even, like, calling someone, like, gay or fag or...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very much like...
Or calling a thing gay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so gay.
Yeah.
Like, that's a put-down.
Yeah.
Like...
But it's like, no, well, you're saying that thing's stupid, and
exactly.
I'm not
yeah.
stupid.
Well, exactly, yeah, why, yeah. You're repressing it.
Yeah.
You're saying, and that's, you know, I love that they sort of got to looking and using, you know... Using the cinema as a weapon in this was sort of going back and like looking at movies from the 30s, 40s, 50s.
Mm.
I like that idea of like the black rage is get out of my way, and the whites are the one, the oppressors, like is a paranoia that, you know, that's they're gonna, I don't know, it's almost what Tarantino does, that you're gonna pay for your sins.
Mm.
Because there are so much blood on the hands of like the white oppressors in America's history, that there's just...
Well, yeah, I mean, even James Baldwin said, it's like, you know, James Baldwin said, like, the South wouldn't be what it is now without, like...
Without the slavery, without the blood, the bones, and, like, the death, the thousands of, probably, I don't know, how many hundreds of thousands of deaths at the hands of, like, you know, the white, the slavery trade.
Look, I'm not sure if this film is getting a wider release in Australia.
Don't know, because it was...
Hopefully it does.
It got nominated, it got just pipped for Best Documentary at the Oscars this year.
But yeah.
Hopefully it does.
So hopefully it does get a wider release. Please go out and watch it if you can.
And if you can't see it, like, this marries up very well with Ava DuVernay's 13th.
Yeah.
That's on Netflix. Like,
I'm sure this will be on Netflix or Stan.
Yeah,
it
has to. It's...
Yeah. But yeah, that's what we've been watching
lately. That's us so far, so hopefully we'll do one of these next week or the week after.
What have you got coming up? I've got Fantastic Woman.
Yep.
Wild Mouse.
Yep.
Call Me By Your Name.
Yep.
Which I'm watching with you.
Yep.
Porto, which I think I'm watching with you.
Yep.
God's Own Country.
Yep, I'm there for that.
The Party and Patty Cake.
Okay, I've got those. Ones I'm really excited for A Graduation, The Little Hours, my second Aubrey Plaza film, Mountain, The Beguiled, and Okja. Which, and
I'm probably going to skip Okja and just watch it on Netflix.
Director's going to be there.
I can't make it.
Why not? Saturday night.
Sunday night.
Ah, Sunday night. Can't
do it. Can't
do it. Why not?
Got stuff on.
Not good enough.
Real
The Beguiled looks amazing. Yeah, you're not seeing The Beguiled?
No. Gonna wait.
And you're not seeing Ghost Story? Or you skipped Ghost Story?
I skipped Ghost Story.
You
it's coming out the cinema.
Didn't you have a ticket for it?
I swapped it.
Ah, the old swapperoo. And then I may see The Square. I'm still umming and ahhing if I see The Square.
Okay.
It means missing State of Origin for it. So.
That's all right. But next week we'll have another episode.
Yeah.
Closer to 50.
Yeah, and then back for
review. I don't know. We'll watch something next week, non-festival related, and talk about the festival and the movie that we just watched.
And then 50th, I don't know. We'll have to work out what we're going to do.
Yes, we'll figure out something.
You might, if we hold off for our 50th, you might even have Spider-Man Homecoming by then.
Maybe.
So.
We'll see.
Very good.
All right.
It's been us.
We're tired. We're going to go watch more films now.
Hey,
all right.
Bye, guys.
Bye.